You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Sipping on Some Crime podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, and today we'll be covering part three of Seeking Diane. In part two, we ended the interview with Sherry as she was talking about the Jane Does that were of interest to this case and the process it has been to get her in the system for NamUs, and what it's like to have to push for your case to be looked into. We discussed what it's taken to get her mom's name in the system and the constant battle Sherry has encountered fighting for her mom, not just legally, but how it's been a battle to keep her family through this fight. There's so much more to tell. So let's get into it by picking up where we left off.
Move forward. Because like you said, you're going to be waiting on Cogburn for the results for the Jane Doe for who knows how long.
A long time. I know my ancestry DNA didn't turn up anything other than my grandfather's DNA. That was interesting. I've had ancestry for almost a year and a half now, and all of a sudden just grandfather's popped up on there that he did his DNA back in like August or something.
I'm glad he did it.
Yeah. I just wish it had to have done something, or he would, you know, be more open to like doing GEDmatch, because I put mine, or GED match, whatever you want to call it. I put mine on there, and that gives police capability to access it if they want to or think that they should, and he just kind of won't answer me. I wish he would just, like, give them the capability to use it.
Yeah. Well, and we've talked about the fact that it feels like in looking for your mom and turning to the family that raised her and the family that was close to her, it feels like they're so scared that somebody is going to look past Diane and open their own closet full of skeletons, that they keep quiet, because that fear of their own skeletons or whatever they're hiding is much bigger than the loss of Diane in a way.
Well, and my thought here is like, because I've sat down, you know, I have, and I've weighed the pros and cons, and even back at Christmas when I lost the baby and all that, and I spoke to you about, you know, needing my family and not really wanting to maybe go through with this, because in the end, it doesn't matter if I open their closets for their skeletons or not, they're going to hate me. It doesn't matter what I do. And I've realized that, which tells me that there's something else there. Because even if you don't want to look for her, even if you don't want to talk about it, you don't want to deal with it, you don't want to even hear about it, that's fine. But let me do it. Don't hate me for doing what I feel like I have to do. You know what I mean? And in the end, they're all going to hate me anyway. It doesn't really matter. So I'm just going to do it.
You're kind of like, you know, at this point, like, look, you played by their rules. You tried to keep them involved. It's not fair. You and Jessica come out of foster care to find that your mom's gone, and the adults in this situation, the people that should have been handling this, haven't. What was that like when you come out? Like, what were their answers when you're like, okay, I want to see mom. Where is she? What was that? What did they tell you?
Well, I want to say that I was looking at the reports, and originally I had thought that, you know, the phone call that my grandfather claims my mom made was in 2006, and that we had gotten out of foster care in 2009. Really, it was 2010, but regardless, it's only another year. So it had been 4 years since that phone call, okay? So 2010, I get out. 4 years ago, my mom called my grandpa, supposedly. So I asked him, you know, what happened, and, you know, he gives me vague answers, like all the answers I told you before. He doesn't know, or the trail ended in Palm Bay, or, you know, he doesn't have contact with those cop buddies anymore, or he doesn't have the phone number she last called from anymore, and he doesn't have the address, or to me, it's just, I think of that, and I would literally look at him and be like, okay, because at the end of the day, I can pry and prod and poke all I want, but they're only going to tell me what they want to tell me. So in my opinion, as soon as I got those answers, it's okay, I'm going around you. I only tell them okay, but okay, I'm going around you. That's what I'm thinking. Because right. You can give me as little information as you want, but I'm going to find it out what happened. I'm going to. There is nothing that's going to stop me. Obviously, like I said, I don't care if they end up hating me. It's something I have to do. And if it were them, they would know what I feel. You know what I mean? Like, Rose isn't missing. So to Dave and Michael and even my grandpa and Rita, they can just call her whenever she wants, whenever they want.
Right.
You know, they can reject calls and miss calls, and it doesn't matter. I don't have that option. So, you know, if Rose just stopped calling one day or stopped answering or just disappeared, you bet your little hiney, at least one of them would be on a plane to go make sure she was okay. Like, you know, right now they're taking it lightly because they have the option to pick up the phone whenever they want. But if she stopped really contacting them, they'd get worried. They'd go.
But why not go get that? Why not get on a plane and go get Diane? Why not get on a plane or drive the streets or, you know, do? And we're not saying that Dad didn't or that they didn't, because we don't know what happened in that time when you were in foster care. I don't know how 4 years goes. Look, if I haven't heard from my daughter in 10 minutes, I know she's 7, about to be 8, but, and I don't know where the child is for 10 minutes. I am melting down. I can't breathe. I don't, you know, if we're out of the store and she gets out of my sight for 3 seconds, I feel like my whole world's collapsing. My heart, you know, drops to my stomach. I'm in pure panic. So I can't imagine the child out in the world somewhere, and you just don't know. You just don't. I mean,
even if you know, you get into adulthood, because I'm sure, you know, like they say, when you have adult children, it's a little different. Like,
bet,
me, for
I'm
instance,
gonna be up this child's butt forever. Bet, like,
still though, you know, when they get older, there's a little more leniency. It's like, oh wow, they have their own children to take to school now. Like, I can't be calling them every 5 minutes. Like, where are you? Are you breathing? Like, did you eat today?
Right.
You know. It's like, they're going to be like, Mom, I'm 45. Can you stop calling my
right.
phone? But my thing is, though, in 2006, this is what it really boils down to me, is like, that day, my grandpa tried to call the hotel back and it was closed down and, like, he couldn't find her. In that very moment, was it like, oh, well, I'll try again tomorrow. And then, you know, when tomorrow came, it was like, well, she's still not answering. And then, like, a week goes by. Was it like, oh, my God, I should really do something? Or, like, should I probably call the police because my daughter hasn't answered in, like, 2 weeks and she always calls? Or was it like, she'll call again in 6 months, I should just let it go? But then again, it's like, when 6 months came, did you feel that again? Or was it just never, did you never have that feeling of, like, somebody needs to look out for her? I don't know. I just have
every
always
year
gotten that
birthday.
Feeling.
Right. Every year the birthday comes up. And that's the thing. I'm going to, you know, get this part of these testimonies out so that people can understand. That's one of the biggest things, is in his testimony, he talks about all he wanted. All he wanted was a little girl. Like, he prayed for that child. He found out Rose was pregnant. He dropped to his knees and he prayed for a daughter. That's all he wanted. So he prayed for this daughter. He got her. He absolutely loved her. That was baby Die-Die. And that was his beautiful little girl. And he was going to give his beautiful girl whatever she wanted, even if she's out causing a mess and destruction and running around. He doesn't care. He's going to give it to her. And then he's going to come save her every time she's in trouble. So how do we go from this, from there to here? He was always showing up. He always saved her. He loved her so much when she was little. I mean, he talks about her in a way that
as a father, from like watching my husband with my daughter, like I can see that father-daughter connection. I can see that love that, you know, in his writing. And yet, here we are, 12 years later.
Yeah. And, you know, he even says in his testimony, like, it just got to be too much. Like, I think he explains, like, or tries to explain why he feels like he doesn't have to look. Or, yeah, can't. I don't know. In my opinion, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure everything my family went through was horrible with my mom. But in my opinion, I'm the child that she left behind. And I'm the child that needed intervention. And I'm the child that was exposed to drugs. And I'm the child that was exposed to abuse. And I'm the child that was exposed. Like, they just don't see that. To them, it's just like, we saved you from everything that happened. You didn't even have to deal with it because we were there. Like, no. I'm
really?
Sorry.
No.
In no world right. is that correct. The amount of people that wanted to intervene, I think, affected us a lot, too. Because it was like, why is our uncle doing this? Why doesn't he want us to be with our mommy? You know, like, and then it was our uncle who was the bad guy. Or, like, you know, just anybody that was taking us was the bad guy. But we never wanted it to be our family. Because then, you know, we felt betrayed by them, too. Not only did our mom and dad get their rights terminated and can't legally see us anymore, but now our family are the ones taking us from her. Like, and so are they the good guys or the bad guys? Like, you know, it was just so rough, and I don't think they see that. It's just like I said, we saved you. You know, we protected you from exposure to all that your mom was doing. And
that's not the truth. It's not the truth at all. Like, yeah, and that's what they forget. They forget that two little girls grew up in all this, and all of it. Those two little girls just want their.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're born into this world confused. You pretty much don't even know that your arms can be extended when you're born. And then you finally, you're like 4 years old and you're finally just kind of like stretching out. And then all this happens. Like, I literally didn't even understand until I was an adult the types of effects it can have on people like me. I mean, I post it all the time. I'm a ratio, I'm a percentage of people that should have failed, should have committed suicide, should have became mass murderers, or, you know, like, that's what happens to people like me. And I don't think anyone really understands it. It's like a miracle when you turn out just wanting to be normal, having your own kids and having a house, and that's a miracle for people like me.
Right, and that you can seek that normalcy, that you know what that, not growing up with it, you still know what is good and safe, and you do everything you can to provide that for yourself and your son.
Yeah, and I mean, I my whole life is literally bent on the fact of him not ever having to deal with what I dealt with, and that's from both aspects. You know, the people thinking that they're making a difference in your life and just trying to help, but they're really hurting you. Or, like, your family being the bad guys and, like, falling into drugs or anything like that. I will never, ever touch hard drugs. And, you know, that's thanks to my mother. And I think it's just a miracle that I saw and learned from their mistakes before I was even making my own mistakes. A lot of young teens and even like 10-year-olds when I was taken for the last time, they see that stuff and they learn to be that, just like their parents. So I took my situation was like, nope, that's not happening.
Right. It's not going to happen. Like, and with everything that's out there said and done, if your mom was listening right now, Diane's listening, what do you want to tell her?
That's a hard one. Thought about that for, you know, 20 years, pretty much.
Right.
Just that I forgive her, and not even that, that there's nothing to forgive her for. I don't see what she did as intentional. I see it as a mistake, and should I make those every day? right. You know, that she could always come back, and that I'm thankful for her as a person, not only because of what I've become, but, you know, what I'm trying to do, and it wouldn't be possible without her and her story, and I think she's the strongest person alive. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I hope. I mean, I hope she hears it. I hope someone that knows where she's at or has seen her can pass that along, because I know, like, if she could just hear, if she just knew, because we don't know if she's out there and she doesn't even know if she knows who she is after all the drug abuse.
Right. I mean, with cases like hers, there's just so many possibilities. And honestly, I don't know whether it excites me or scares me more finding out which possibility it ends up being, because there's just so many. Like we said, it could have been foul play. It could have nothing to do with that. She could be in witness protection. She could be a prostitute in another state still doing the same stuff she's doing. One of her exes could have done something to her. She could have done something to herself. She could have gotten married, changed her name, and has kids somewhere else. We have no idea, literally, like, not one, because the last time she was seen was so cut and dry that there's no pieces, you know, to pick up and put together from that. I don't know. I hope she's out there. I really do. That would be awesome if I could help her in any way, you know.
Right. But just letting her know that, you know, there's no animosity. There's nothing. She's always welcome. Home.
I literally don't even have questions. Like, I think that's some individual's biggest fear with reuniting after such long periods of time, like how mine would be if my mother was out there and we found her. Their biggest fear is like the questions or the guilt that they're going to have to face. Like, it would literally be like we met all over again. I don't know you. I haven't seen you in 20 years. You're a brand new person to me. Go on and make mistakes and burn bridges if you want to, but that's your choice. Like, she has the choice. That's my point, is like, you have the choice to come back into my life and me ask you nothing. Unless you want to tell me what happened, you know, like it's a crazy cool story and you want to tell me, fine. But
right. Other
than that, I don't want to know why you left. You had your reasons. That's not any of my business. You know what I mean? My business is healing my life and moving forward with what I want to do. And in order to do that, I feel like I have to know where my mother is, you know?
Right.
So
not the why,
to me, that's all it's about.
Where.
Right. Not why, not where, not who, not, you know, how long. I don't care what you did. Like I said, unless you want to tell me, that's on you. But it'll be like meeting a brand new person. You know, I'd be like, here, this is my son. This is your grandbaby. That's it. There'd be no feeling guilty, no feeling sorry or any of that. It's not what it's about for me. I think that anger, like, towards my mother and just, like, why did she leave us, or, you know, why is she not coming back, that was gone with, like, within 5 years. I was still, like, little. I mean, not little, but I was 14.
And even now, I mean, I'm an adult and I still have questions for the people in my life that have done things that'll never go away. And I'm 35. So,
right.
I mean, we have the right to those feelings 100%. But if you think Jessica feels the same way, she just wants her here.
I know she does. My sister's opinion on it is a little more drastic than mine. No offense, Jessica. But she listens to us hardcore. So, her opinion is just, you know, I think one time she said to me, if she needed money for a crack rock, I'd give it to her tomorrow. Like, she doesn't care. She just wants her back. She doesn't care if she still wants to be a drug addict. She'll go and visit her under the bridge, she said. So it's just a matter of having her back in our lives, knowing where she is and not having that, like, pull, like I said, every morning when I wake up, it's like, God, I wonder if I'll find her today, you know, or will it be next week, or will it be when I die, or will it be when she dies? You know, like, I just, there's so many everyday questions that I have to do it. And I mean, to know that my sister feels that strongly about it, she's more afraid to talk about it and she's more shy, but she still wants her mom no matter what. You know what I mean?
And in the end, if it is, you do get the call that they found her and this is a Jane Doe, are you and Jessica going to be able to survive that and put the pieces together even without her having to be able to tell you what, how things happen or where she went? Are you going to be able to take those pieces as closure?
I want to say yes. You know, everybody feels some sort of sadness through things like that. But so, of course, there'll be those normal feelings. But at the same time, I think there'll be a sense of relief no matter what it is. I've told Jessica, even if I found her right front tooth and that was it, and they found that and they knew that she had died and that was it, that was all that was left, I would feel better than I do today. Only because today there's 1,000 questions. And with that, there would be one answer. And that just, it just makes it so much more simple. I know that sounds like kind of cold-hearted, but when you've, this has been weighing on you for 20 years, it's like, all right, let's just get to the end of this now. You know what I mean? Not like the end, but let's find
her.
Let's find where she is. Right. It's just give me something so that I have something to go home and sleep soundly with. Like, not that I'd be able to sleep soundly knowing she's deceased, but just knowing something.
That she's not
some
out
sort
there
of
alone
peace.
Or scared or
cold or sick with the coronavirus. Like, with this coronavirus, I've been so scared. Like, if she's transient still, you know, if that were the case, how do homeless deal with stuff like this? It's just so scary. I worry. Anytime there's anything, I mean, and her birthday and my birthday and Jessica's birthday and now my son's birthday, and you know, just really calls you to want to do more anytime anything happens.
I just hope some magical way that if she's still out there, she hears this and knows that she can just come home.
I hope so, too. And coming home doesn't necessarily, here's another thing I fear, is that she called in 2006 and they kind of not rejected the phone call, but only spoke to her for a minute. And when her father found out she was intoxicated, he didn't want to talk anymore. My fear is that she felt like she was being wrote off, that they didn't want anything to do with her. So she might feel like we feel that way. And we don't feel that way at all. Like, not one bit, if she ever hears this. I don't associate with those feelings at all. You could walk into my front door right now and I would help you somehow. You know, I would make sure you had a means to live. Because, you know, if that were me, I'd be like, well, they're the ones that were taking my kids on and off. They're the ones that helped get my kids put into foster care. They're the ones that were there when my kids got out of foster care. And they don't want anything to do with me. And now my kids are with them. So to me, that would be like, I have no chance. You know, I might just go off the deep end because there's nothing else I can do there. But no,
honestly, she might not know who she is. Let's be honest. Enough
drugs. That's another possibility.
Yeah, enough drugs, enough alcohol. You go into these homeless camps, not all of them know who they are, remember who they are, know how they got there, have any identification on them, haven't been hanging around enough. You know, they get so lost sometimes and so lost they don't know who they are.
Well, and another thing Foreman told me too was she, towards the end, I guess, he had to have known she was prostituting now that I think about it, because he told me this. He said that she used to get the money from the John, like the guy she was about to sleep with, and then tell him that she needed to stop at the gas station on the way to the hotel room to get something to drink. and she would go out the back door of the gas station with his money. So if Foreman told me that, then he knew she was prostituting.
Right.
How else would he know that? Unless she came back after prostituting and told him the story.
And that's taken some risky behaviors with some angry men, I would assume.
That too. That was my point. Is like she very well could have fell to some foul play with one of these Johns if she really robbed the wrong person or, you know, messed over the wrong person. She would definitely be hearing about that, I'm sure.
Well, and she was always so tough as nails. I don't think she had any fear. Like, I just don't, she doesn't seem like somebody that had fear.
Not at all. And I mean, if the phone call from the other sex workers was, you know, real, and they called and told him that JP was dragging her down US 1 and she had a broken cheekbone, that sounds like maybe she robbed him or took his money and was getting her little butt beat for it. So that's just a theory again, but that also could be information just trying to deter us from the fact that she was using the Foreman last name.
I keep coming back to that. She always used his last name, and then there's this husband in the room, and not to say that there isn't a John in that police report where they mention the husband, but I just feel like maybe they were both. There might be more to it. Like, he ran these tricks with her. I think,
right.
I don't know. I think there's more to it, and maybe he ran these tricks with her, and she got hurt, and he knows it.
That, or he ran the tricks with her, and in 2005, when she got arrested, he dipped out to North Carolina from the hotel.
Right.
Because, like, where would he have gone if he was in the hotel room with her when she got arrested? Where would he have gone? You know, say he was just like, I'm sick of this.
Right.
And they were never really married, so it wasn't his real wife. It's not like he had any ties to her. He could just leave her. And I mean, telling me that whole story is better than saying, oh, I left her in some hotel room with some pimp guy we were running tricks with. You know, like, it's a better story saying he left her at a house and she was dating the guy, like she was with JP. Sounds better than, I just up and left her in a hotel.
You want to hear the ugly, nasty truth. You don't care.
That's another thing I want to tell all listeners or anyone who wants to give tips or anything like that. If you come to me and tell me I know who did something such and such to your mother, I will never come after you. I don't care about your skeletons in your closet. Your business is your business. All I want is information about my mother. I don't care about Foreman. I don't care about Boggs. I don't care about Schmidt, in a sense, meaning I don't care about what they've done wrong. I'm not after them in any way, shape, or form. I care about them as people, but my point being, you can come to me with anything. It's not like I'm going to call the cops and be like, this person did this and said this, and that's not my goal here.
And it's
just to obtain information.
And it's not going to shatter the image of your mother. You know
who
your mother was. You're not afraid to hear her dark, dirty secret. Don't come to you and say, well, she was dating this guy. And, you know, if she wasn't dating him, if this really was a transaction and you have some tips, tell me. Like, I know who my mother was. I know what she was doing. Like, stop treating me like a child, you know, like just, or, you know, gloves on, being so gentle about it. Like, the way he tries to tell you, oh, yeah, she was dating JP. Like, no. Tell me who JP really was and the scenario that really happened, because if you sugarcoat all this stuff, like,
it's just going to take me longer. It's just going to take me longer, and I'm still going to find out the real information eventually. Like, I'm still going to pry it out of you. So you might as well just tell me up front. But, like, I don't know if Foreman was ever in Jacksonville. Here's another thing. I can't find any criminal record of Foreman in Jacksonville, so I can't prove that he was ever there or if he is the husband. I know, like we said, they were never actually married, so she could very well have just used that name on her own. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't see it.
I don't see it either. I feel like there's a connection to the Kimberly Foreman alias and Foreman. I think
And like you said, it's either, well, this was my ex-boyfriend who's going to use that name, or they were running tricks together.
Yep. Exactly. Which, and
I mean, I feel it's more that way. I feel like there's more.
I feel like if now that he, I'm thinking about, or like processing the fact that he told me she came back and said that she had stolen money and ran out the back door or whatever, then he knew she was doing it. And if you're aware and you're with her, then you're okay with it. And if you're okay with it, you're part of it. I'm sorry. But like,
right.
You were basically like, go out, sleep with them, and come back and give me the money or whatever.
Right. Or let's use it on our bills or let's use it. I mean, you were part of it if you are in on it. And I'm wondering if there's more to that. I mean, there's so much more to JT's story and her, Foreman's story and her, that we're ever going to get from the two of them.
I mean, and the fact that, oh, also something I had to correct was I kept saying that Fred passed away in 2015. It was 2013. And when I obtained the records in 2015, that's why I was so upset, because I had found out that she passed just 2 years prior to me looking her up.
I feel like Fred would have had a lot of insight to
Yes, and there was another man. So anytime my mom got in a huge fight with Boggs or anyone, we would go to this guy's house. There's these, like, brown apartments. And if you're listening and you're in Brevard, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's these brown apartments next to the Brunswick bowling lanes in Melbourne. And we used to walk there no matter what time of night it was. I mean, I think the police found us on US 1 walking one time at 2 o'clock in the morning, me and my sister in each hand of my mother. So walking down the highway with your two little girls in the middle of the, you know, wee hours of the morning, doesn't look so great. But she was walking to this guy named Zach Womack's house. Zach Womack was this rocker dude. He had long black hair. He was so cool. And he had a huge Great Danes in his house. That's all I can remember. And I just remember Jessica and I would go there and sit on the couch, and they would go in the room. And I don't ever remember why, or if he was giving her drugs, mind you, or if they were fooling around, but that's where she would hide from boyfriends. And he is also deceased. He died in 2012. So it's just been, like, really impossible. Also, you know, the reason why this case is so jumbled and so construed and messed up is because there's so many people involved. Half of them are deceased. Half of them were drug addicts and don't even remember. Half of them don't want to be involved. You know what I mean? It's just like,
it's so hard. And so many people passed away. Like you said, they either don't want to be involved, they passed away. A lot of them have passed away. That's the crucial people that we could have spoke to, that, especially Fred. I really wish that you girls had gotten a chance to sit down and talk to Fred, because that, I feel like the girl's best friend, you know, I think she would have been able just to give you more pieces of your mother, just to put pieces together for you.
Well, and then another odd fact that needs to be put out there, too, that I'm remembering, is that the last we knew of Fred being around and involved in our lives was 2003. Apparently, 2004, she gets with a new man. That was her boyfriend when she passed away 9 years later. They were together for 9 years. The year following my mother knowing her. So meaning my mother and her know each other in 2003. She meets this guy in 2004. They stay together until 2013 when she passes away. He knows nothing about my mother, apparently. He has never heard
That's
of her.
Crazy.
He has no record of ever knowing her or hearing about her or even seeing her face, nothing. But apparently he has all of Fred's belongings and also her ashes, which he would like to give to her daughters. I haven't been able to arrange that yet, but working on it. Regardless, if he has all her belongings, I know he has shoeboxes and shoeboxes of pictures, he told me. And I'm in them. So if you know I'm in the pictures,
it'd be great to get those.
How do you not know my mother? That's what I'm wondering.
I don't see Fred and Diane just stop being friends just because she married someone else.
I don't see how he never met her or how they didn't ever cross lines or she didn't ever get a, he didn't answer a phone call from Diane looking for Fred at 2 in the morning. Right. Like, come on.
Right.
That part I don't get. And if they didn't, did they have a fallout that we don't know about?
Not only that, but if you have her old cell phone, can I have it?
Right.
Are you going to use it or anything like that? Because if not, can I have it? Because I could
literally
just go in the recent call log and see if any of them's known numbers, you know, belong to my mother, any of the ones in the phone book,
well,
in the phone.
Those shoeboxes might have letters from your mom. There might be a lot of stuff lying around there that he just doesn't realize he has.
Right, and another thing people don't realize, too, is, like, you know, I contact this guy. He doesn't know me from Adam. He doesn't know me at all. So I contact him, and so I'm just this girl whose mom's missing. She's been missing since your deceased girlfriend knew her. Do you have any information? You know, I'm going to be like, no, I don't know anything. Like, I don't have anything to do with that. I don't know, like, because I don't want to be involved. And at the same time, I don't want to talk about my deceased girlfriend that just died 6 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, so
right.
She didn't really want to talk, but yeah, like at the same time, can you just like kind of fork over the stuff that you already said you don't really want to keep? It's for her daughters. So if you would just give it to them, they're more than willing to talk to me. They want to come visit me where I'm living, stuff like that. Mind you, the last time we saw each other, I was like 6 or 7 and they were both 4. So these are the twins, Fred's twins. So yeah. And tracking them down was a whole nother podcast in itself too. Like I have done so much for this case and it's led nowhere, but a pile of information that I can't really do anything with yet. Like I've explained to you, for a while now, for like a year now. I just feel like I have all this info that does nothing. Like, it's great information. It's great. It's like, you know, you hear it and you're like, oh, that's a tip. That's a fact. Like, you found a handicap plate. But, like, what do you do with that? There's nothing you can do. You just, it's info that you have that doesn't do anything. So,
right. We need help with a lot of puzzles because it's all there. Like you said, you have this. It's almost like you dump the jigsaw on the table and you put it together, but you're just missing enough pieces to see what the picture is. But, like, you've got a picture. You just need, like, a piece here and piece here and piece here. And we can't seem to get those pieces. We have all these great pieces, like you said, out there that lead to absolutely nothing that
right.
You would think would get you somewhere.
And I'm lucky to have all the sleuths that I have, obviously all of our listeners. I think that the last episode has like 50 something listens. That is like more than enough for me. I was like happy crying when I saw that.
Right.
And it's just because without you guys, like I'm about to send a notarized copy of my driver's license to a girl in Brevard whom I don't even really know, but she works with the clerk of court and she's going to turn in my notarized copy of my driver's license so I can get the remainder of my foster care case file that they're holding from me. So, like, just without people like that, like, who would have known that this girl would come out of nowhere and just want to be super helpful and, you know, have credentials to back up who she is and, like I'm going to do this for you. Like, okay, yes, you are.
Right.
You know, it's
awesome.
Because
that's what it takes for these families. Because like we said, unless you find something to bring the detective, nothing moves on your mother's case. Not a thing.
That's true. I should just get my own badge because at this point, I mean.
Right. I think that's how most people feel. Like we've talked about Sarah Turney multiple times because we both love her.
Yes.
That's how we met was
yes.
Going to that Crime Junkies show, and I messaged Sarah, and I was like, I'm going to be there, let's meet up, because I have some presents for her that I totally forgot. Sorry, Sarah, I still have them. They're sitting on my table over here. I still have
them.
I feel awesome. Every time I see her, I forget to give them to her. But yeah, and she was like, let's go to dinner or drinks afterwards. I'm meeting a few friends, and then I saw you and Maggie walk up, and had no clue you had a missing mother or anything. I thought you were just a crime junkie fan, and we're sitting there talking. And you're like, yeah, my mom's missing. And I'm like, wait, what?
I remember, and then the rest of the conversation was just like, and no offense to Maggie or Sarah, I love you both, but the rest was just like me and you talking, and it was just like, we're gonna do this, we're gonna,
right, we were like on point. It was like, this is like, we were like, okay, and I was like, exactly, like, we love Sarah and Maggie, and we're so happy you're there, and like, I'm so grateful that those two were able to put the two of us together, because I feel like it was very important for Maggie and Sarah to get us together, and they just didn't even know how important that was and what that's meant for us. So definitely thankful to the two of them for that.
Yes, and Maggie's actually someone that we'll probably be bringing on later on, just to do a little like fun episode.
I'm hoping
kind of take away from all the sadness.
Right. I'm hoping to do like a Q&A, like where we get together and we get, you know, I'm hoping, you know, Jessica, I'm asking you, I know you're shy, if you'll come along and just have a chat with me, your sis, Maggie, sit down and just have a conversation and give it time for people to ask questions and see where we get, and then kind of do a check-in with everybody and like just sit down and see where, because it's interesting how you and Maggie met. It's interesting how this whole like little world kind of comes together, and
yeah,
you know, if they knew what we've gone through just in these months, in this, yeah, almost a year, just the information we found, what we've gone through, and why people don't understand that, what it takes to tell a story like this, the work that
right.
it takes, and what it takes for you every day to get up and look for your mom, and just what that means.
I think it's just mainly divine intervention. That's like literally the only way I can explain my whole life. Like, so much bad things have crossed my path in my life, and I kind of just not exactly go with the flow or like leave it all up to the universe type thing. I do choose my own steps, but at the same time, I feel like a lot of what's happened to me is meant to have happened to me. I wouldn't even be in Arizona if it weren't for like a horrible prior relationship and all that happening. But like, there was a reason, because I wouldn't be in Arizona. I never would have met you. I never would have contacted Maggie. There's a reason I'm here. And there's a reason I look for my mom every day in the same sense. You know, there's something that pulls me to it. And there's a reason, I'm sure. Something's telling me to not stop. Something's telling me to keep going. And I have to just believe in that and lean on it, because she needs to be found. It's just, that's
she
it.
Does. She needs to come home. And no
yeah.
matter how we find her, or no matter what the result is, she needs to come home, and you and Jess are home. And it's time for her to come back to that, no matter how we do it. But you both deserve answers. And I'm really, really hoping that our listeners can share her story, because like you said, even 50 more people knowing Diane's name and a piece of her story, that's amazing. That's more than we could have asked for. Every time someone else goes, oh, who's Diane? And they take 10 seconds to even look at her picture and read a little bit about her and put that little category clip in their brain. I've seen this picture. I know this name. Okay, this is what happened to her. That's a big deal. It's a big deal that people stop and go, okay, Diane Francis, I'm going to remember that name. And I'm going to, if I see her, awesome, I'm going to let somebody know. It's a big deal.
Seriously. And like, you know, even if just one of those 50 people happens to be someone like me, like, and lives to see another day, or even just keeps going on their case, and that person ends up being found, like, I would be forever grateful. I've done my job. Like,
right.
It's done. Because there's other people out there that go through this and they don't keep going. They give up and they give in to whatever that might be, suicide, drugs, just, you know, a crazy lifestyle because they feel like it's over and they're not worth it, or even just give up and stop trying because they feel like it's useless. Like, mm-hmm. It's not useless. And I've been that person so many times too. I won't lie. I've given up. I told you I've stopped for a couple years at a time here and there, just because I get
right.
so overwhelmed with the fact that nothing's happening.
Well,
but
your life is still moving too. People forget that. You still have a life where you experience loss, joy. You have to go take care of your child every day. You have to have relationships every day. Life is still there, and your mother's still missing. But life doesn't stop running for you to take time to find her.
No, I have to deal with life on top of all of this stuff that we're talking about.
Right. And a lot of things that you could use your mother for. A lot of things that children, no matter how old they are, will turn to their mother and say, look, I'm not big enough for this. I'm not adult enough for this. I need you. And to have to go through those things without your mom is just not fair. And it's messed up and it sucks. And we just need answers at this point. At least if you had answers of why you went through it without it, you know, without your mom, or you could even come to her later and talk to her about it. Something.
Yeah, I mean, when I just recently lost the baby in December, all I could think about is like how alone she probably was or felt when she lost the baby back in 1985. You know, it was kind of like experiencing that. She was a lot further along than I was. Mine was just a tubal pregnancy, basically. Hers was a formed fetus and things like that. So it was a little different. But at the same time, that feeling of loss and just loneliness and hurt, I can't imagine. And then, of course, her parents kind of, I found out that apparently she didn't want a burial for the baby. Like, she kind of just wanted it to go away. She didn't want to deal with it anymore. And they made like a whole ceremony out of it. They did the gravestone and all of that and buried her. And I found out from family members that that was not what she wanted. And I'm assuming that would kill me. I mean, I just left the hospital and that was it. I'm sure they disposed of the biohazard material once I was already gone.
Right.
But my mom didn't get to just have that cut and dry, like, leave it behind you kind of thing. She had to experience a ceremony for a baby that she only got to hold for, like, a couple seconds, and it was deceased. So I don't know how that would affect me. Probably a lot worse than what I went through, I'm sure. So, like, I had so much pain pills, it was just like, okay, I'm going home now?
Yeah. Gonna numb all this pain and leave. Yeah, I mean, she went through a lot that led her down the road that she went, and now we just need to figure out where the rest of the road went, because she is, there's no movement on her. There's, after 2005, there's no arrest, there's no jobs, there's no evictions, there's no court appearances, and it makes no sense.
Seriously, and you know how even after you go to court, stuff like that, if you don't pay your fines, they send you, like, official records? You can look that up in official records. It's, like, notices they've sent you. Those stopped in 2006 as well, which the ones in 2006 are from fines she never paid in 2005. Those are letters they're sending her to tell her she went to collections or whatever. So they know she was gone. They couldn't even find her to get fees or, like, serve a bench warrant back then. So, I don't know. She either can disappear really well, which I see that being hard for a homeless prostitute, or something happened to her.
Either way, we need the answer.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Sherry and I are so grateful for every single listener. We will be back with part 4 of Seeking Diane, where we will take a deeper dive into David's testimony, Rose's interview, and Charles, Sherry and Jessica's father's testimony. Do not forget, when you see those missing and murdered posts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, to hit those share and retweet buttons for those families and loved ones. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.